website that people can go to for more information on how to fight, and that's www.mumia.org. Yeah, you can just Google Mumia.
If you Google Mumia, you're going to get a lot of things. And a lot of people say, and there are a lot of people interested. And it's interesting. I was on a speaking tour in February in Berlin and Hamburg, Germany, and in March, and I just in France.
Hello, you're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich. A little bit late today, but I wanted to finish up that interview about Mumia Abdul-Jamal, and on that last note there about going to check out his website, I have been listening to some of the interviews with him over the last while here at KPOO, because Prison Focus precedes our show every Thursday here at Prison Focus is at 11 o'clock. And it's just been bringing up a lot of subjects in my mind about the nature of our reality and our world today, and I wanted to chat. So today I find myself here on the air with you all speaking about reality and healthful living. My guest that was going to be with me today for some reason got caught up in traffic. I'm not really sure, but hey, that's part of the reality that we all have to deal with, because life doesn't go straight from here to there as often as we'd like. So often we just have to pick it up and keep on moving. Somebody famous once said that life is not about the things that happen, but it's how you respond to the things that happen around you. So often we get into this cycle of defining ourselves by the events that happen around us. And we say, oh, this is difficult or that's difficult. Therefore, I must be a challenged person or a difficult person to attract these things. But that's just not really the way that life works, I believe. I think that there's many things that we don't have control over. And our job as humans trying to do our best job is to respond, is to get up and keep moving and realize that life really is about ready, fire, aim. And that harkens back to the notion of that with all things that we do, we're always aiming on the way. Always aiming on the way. So today in Reality Sandwich, I'm just going to be going off on whatever's on my mind about the nature of our world. I want to talk a little bit about healthful living, and we may possibly get into the subject a little bit later on in the show of spiritual capitalism if my buddy Jason makes it in, and we can chat about that. Otherwise, we'll do that on another show. But I do want to invite you anytime over the next 40 minutes or so to call in and chat with me. Today's show is just an open forum on Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth. Over the past couple of years here on the show, we have delved into subjects of global sustainability, what's happening in the future with respect to global energy scenarios. We've had experts on discussing the peak oil subject, which is this notion that the Earth is running out of energy. If you really haven't heard about this, I shouldn't speak about it lightly, because it is a fairly significant topic for us to really stop and realize that as we all collectively as 6-point-something billion humans inhabit this planet, we've become increasingly dependent upon a single source of energy to sustain our way of life. And I'm not just talking about fueling our cars or flying around in airplanes or, you know, powering our, you know, little devices here and there and keeping the lights running. But I mean as far as actually being able to feed ourselves, actually being able to produce food in the mass quantities that we do. Most commercial fertilizers are produced using natural gas and natural gas processes. I mean, I never knew that until very recently when I've delved more and more into this and understanding that it's really only a fraction of the using oil, petroleum, the stuff that we pull out of the ground for making our vehicles move is only a fraction of what we utilize it for. There are so many other factors. I suggest that anyone connect in with a main site for information on this is culturechange.org. Jan Lundberg's site has all kinds of information about global future energy scenarios, impending changes in the Earth, and you can learn there about how many different things that we utilize petroleum for. all plastics, most plastics. Some come from plant-based, but most of the plastics that we use come somehow from oil, come out of the ground. But back to this notion about sustainability and producing food. When I saw and realized how much we are so dependent upon natural gas for the production of fertilizers, which produce all of our most of the foods that are growing and around the planet, we begin to realize that, wow, we are dependent on the continuation of that resource to be able to make that much food to feed the 6-point-something billion people that we have. Now, for all of my life, and I'm approaching my 40th birthday, I'll say, most of my life, this thing is just, it's always been, there's been plenty. It's always been that there's infinite supply, and someday, way into the future, way into the 2000s, of which we've already found ourselves in, that we would slowly come up with new technologies or new ways, new efficiencies. I remember seeing those films in school back in the 70s and 80s about what the world would be like in the future. Everything automated, robots cooking our breakfast, you know, those kind of things. I think by now we were supposed to be having flying cars that just levitated and hovered around. Never knew how they'd be powered, but that's what our vision of the future is. So I don't know if we're still collectively eluding ourselves that that sort of a science fiction kind of a future is coming or not, or whether or not we collectively are really suppressing this inevitable reality if on our planet that these resources are increasingly scarce. So this topic of peak oil has to do with the notion that global oil extraction, petroleum extraction, will at some point reach its peak, meaning that we will have reached, we have been extracting, pulling out the most that we can at any given point. We discover a particular field, you pull oil out of it, and at some point you have maximized your rate of extraction, after which it's downhill from there, meaning that if you were at one point getting 100 units out of something consistently, at some point, you're going to start dropping down to 98, 95, and 80, and then, you know, dropping off dramatically. I've been following this particular subject for a few years and am finding it to be really at the core of so many things that are going on in our world today, and helps to explain, if you begin to connect the dots, many different things that we've been experiencing over the last, certainly over the last 4 or 5 years, if you go back to 9/11, the events of that day, and begin to understand, gee, why did that happen? How did our country kind of be asleep at the wheel and allow that to happen now that we have so much information that tells us that we kind of knew it was coming and didn't do a heck of a lot about it? So, yes, I am making some suppositions there. And since we are on Free Speech Radio, I can pretty much say what I feel and what I sense to be suspicious and worthy of our collective inquiry, again, as I continue to say, as collective humans on the planet, because we are all interconnected. Again, this is another major, major area of suppression, I think, in the collective consciousness of humanity, is denying this notion of our interconnectedness. So as we steamroll into the future, these undeniable truths will emerge. You cannot suppress truth forever. So back to the peak oil issue, I think I'm suspecting now that this is something that has not been being talked about. It's a pretty darn large issue that the planet's main energy source is heading into decline in its production, and we collectively haven't come up with a plan B. We don't know what we're going to do to produce energy. We don't know what we're going to do to produce fertilizers to be able to grow food in such mass quantities as to feed the millions and millions of people that are living mostly in cities around the globe, who have the luxury of having food transported in on diesel-consuming trucks from all over the place. We are so disconnected from the nature of the things around us that we touch and consume. I recently saw a presentation of a talk by David Suzuki, who is a very well-known scientist and, boy, I wish I knew his absolute credentials in front of me right now, but he's been around for many, many years. I've seen him all over Discovery Channel. He is an environmentalist. He's an activist, and he speaks very eloquently about the interconnectedness of all things in the world. And for one, he speaks, you know, just beginning with the very things that we touch and interact with every day, our own clothing, thinking about, you know, where did it come from? Where did this shirt come from that I'm wearing now? The fabric, is it cotton? Where was it grown? Who harvested it? Where was it sown? Was it sown by, you know, happy people in a factory in my dreams in the South somewhere? Or was it sown and manufactured at a high production facility somewhere in China and shipped over here so that I could have the luxury of, you know, only paying, you know, $12 for it or whatever the heck? And these types of notions, I feel, are increasingly important to embed into our understanding of our world and of our reality, because the more that we disconnect ourselves from that which is real and the more that we elude ourselves, the more that we can run down a path that doesn't serve us. That doesn't serve us. And I'm speaking now collectively, but these same principles apply whether we're talking about our individual life or our collective life as a family or in a team or really in any particular organization, i.e. a company, which is really, when we think about it, simply a whole bunch of individual people getting together to work to make something happen as a collective. And when that happens, we throw in all kinds of structure and other systems that inhibit the absolute flowing of people and their resources and their ability to participate and be involved and to bring forward their best. But the more that people are connected in to the nature of their reality, the more that we can understand the factors that are influencing our own behavior, the more that we can have an affinity for these things, the more that we can direct them and help them to serve us. You know, I'm seeing that somebody's calling in, and I'm just kind of rambling on various subjects, but I do want to continue on this notion of interconnectedness, suppressed realities emerging in the world, and further subjects here on Reality Sandwich today. So I invite you to call in at 346-5376 under the 415 area code, and I'll put you on the air and we'll chat. So I'm going to play a little bit of Billie Holiday here, one of my favorites, and come right back in just one moment.
I was a stranger in the city, out of town, where the people I knew. I had that feeling of self-pity. What to do, what to do, what to do. The outlook was decidedly blue. But as I walked through the foggy streets alone, it turned out to be the luckiest day I've known. A foggy day in London town had me low and had me down. I viewed the morning with such alarm. The British Museum had lost its charm. How long, I wondered, could this thing last? But the age of miracles hadn't passed. For suddenly, I saw you there, and through foggy London town, the sun was shining everywhere.
Thank you, Billy. Well, we know that she was speaking about London, but probably dreaming of San Francisco. I just had a caller on the line. Are you there?
Yes.
Hey, Larry. Larry, thank you for calling in. You had mentioned that when I started talking about interconnectedness, you said, I've got to phone in.
Well, that's something that has been actually on my mind a lot lately, and in fact, it's come up in different conversations related to actually to the political scenery. And I was very interested because I've always been thinking of interconnectedness in this large scale of economic interconnectedness of the world and the effects that any kind of aggression or war has across the world and depletion of environmental resources. But you brought up some very interesting points about just at a very individual level how we can notice the interconnectedness. But here's a kind of a notion that I want to put out there and get your reaction to, and I'm also curious about the author of that book and whether he speaks to this. I have a belief, I guess I'll call it, that our world is becoming increasingly more interconnected, and it's an inevitable as the nature of our travel and movement and effect that we can have on each other, whether it be economic systems, something happens in one place affecting another economy, or whether it be environmental systems, depletion of the rainforest affecting another area, or a volcanic eruption, or whether it be a war and the effects of that, and which leads me to the belief that from a problem-solving standpoint, and now I'll get to the main point here, is that from a problem-solving standpoint, it seems like we then, in turn, need to take a collective, to use your term, or at least an integrated look at these types of problems. I guess what follows to me logically is that if the world is becoming more interconnected, that we then have to work together to solve these interconnected problems, that no longer will we be able to take isolated or unilateral actions to try and solve problems, and that will become increasingly difficult over time. At least this is my theory, my belief. And so I'm a little disappointed in this current administration because I feel like we've actually taken several steps back in that approach to problem solving, and I guess I'm just very interested in that problem solving as it applies to an interconnected world. So maybe I'll just stop there. Curious to get your. I love your show, by the way. I just
thank you.
Really, really enjoy your thoughtfulness, and curious to hear your reactions.
Okay, well, stay with me on the line, and we'll just chat about that for a moment. You know, it's interesting because I as I hear you speak about the increasing, you know, interconnectedness of the planet, and our awareness of those things. Let's first say that certainly we are here in America, right? So we have that ability to perceive things a little bit more than probably a lot of the planet, right? Because we're so connected into media and the internet, and but some of the hard facts are, in fact, facts, right? That we have been evolving through time. Globalization has increased our very visceral interconnectedness through, you know, economic activity around the world and trade throughout all different countries around the world.
Yeah.
The fact that we now have, you know, news up to the second, when, you know, a plane crashes in Somalia, you're going to know about it like in 5 minutes. You know, we have this knowledge. The entire system that is the planet is getting increasingly wired as a collective organism, such that we now have the understanding of when something, you know, somebody burps over in China, you know, we're going to feel it over here, for example.
Yeah.
We didn't quite have that knowledge and that feedback only, you know, maybe 10, 12, 15 years ago. It's getting more and more so today. And like you say, also events like, you know, like a tsunami affects 25 countries or really the entire planet. The more that we learn about the precipitous nature of some of the unavoidable planetary instances, things like, boy, that was a heck of a phrase, planetary instances, things like earthquakes or volcanoes or increasing hurricanes, right, that affect greater numbers of people, that could affect an oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico that suddenly, you know, a storm wipes out an oil rig or just knocks it down for a few days and global oil supply is interrupted and prices go up at our pump like tomorrow, right? So we're beginning to realize the hairline trigger between these global events and how it impacts millions and millions of people. So I think the same as any organism develops, and the analogy that I make is how we as humans develop as babies, right? We come out, we come into the world, and in our first few months and first couple of years, synapses are connecting. Our wiring is taking place. We slowly begin to have awareness that, hey, that's our toe down there. I can feel it. I can sense it. And I can actually interact with that. And if I stub it, I'm going to feel it, right? And we begin to get that feedback loop. The same way now that the entire planet is wiring itself and feeding itself its own information and knowledge about its existence, who it is collectively, right? Yet we've been spending all this time, historically and much more so recently, dividing up the lines, separating ourselves, pursuing, as we jump back now to the to looking at the individual, right, this illusion of our ego and our separateness, and playing our own little game of controlling things.
Right.
If we can control all the factors, then we can determine exactly what's going to happen and continue to deny that we are really in effect of everything around us. I mean, that's a huge, huge, massive denial that we do. Again, we do that as individuals. We have a challenge in our lives and we try to shut people out and think that we can handle it on our own.
Right.
People do that very often in companies or on a team. And, a whole team of people are working together on somebody. One person has a challenge for whatever reason, whether it's personal or even with others, and they'll keep quiet and they'll just assume that if I don't say anything, then it'll go away. But not true. Just by your sheer existence, you are participating. So these notions, I believe, are beginning to play out now more globally, and that's bringing me back to your question about how do we begin to learn from this and to grow from this and to problem solve from this.
Right.
My quick response is, firstly, awareness. All new things begin with awareness of the nature of what's really going on. So what we have been trying to do really here with Reality Sandwich, both Julie and myself, and with Healthful Living, our holistic health and healing practice, is to start with that awareness, to say, hey, let's talk about the nature of our reality and what's going on. What are we seeing? What are we observing? What's really happening that we're not always talking about? And what does it really mean? And how can we take that in and just inform ourselves? And what we do by that is to break ourselves out of default denial. And default denial is just, going through life is, doing what you've learned and what you've told and replicating patterns that you've learned just simply because you've learned them, whether or not they're really working for you. So we're talking about stopping and saying, hey, what's really working? Is this global cutting up the lines and having all these different divisions of countries and who's got more of what and who's got more power and who can threaten one another? Is it really working for us as a collective?
It's interesting. If I can just jump in,
sure.
And respond to your first point about the awareness. First of all, I think it's intriguing that this interconnectedness exists both on the individual and on the group, if you will, basis, whether it be country or some other form of group, organization, company, whatever. I totally, your point about the awareness resonates with me in dealing with personal issues. I remember either reading or hearing from somebody about the role that awareness plays in being, maybe 70% of the solution, in the sense that it frees you up to then be open to and be able to find the solutions, and or maybe solution is too strong, but the actions that can lead to some help and some support or some aid, and conversely, denial blocks that. So just to build on your point, I think awareness is a very, very important step in then getting to the next stage of really doing reacting differently or behaving differently when confronting that interconnectedness, and so having that awareness and that sensitivity.
Right. Now, let's not ditch denial. I mean, it definitely serves a role, a purpose, right? When we're dealing with any change or any uncertainty, it's typical, it's common for us initially to deny it and say, this is not happening, right? you know, particularly really any part in our world, or even if you, you know, radically change your, you know, your wife changes her haircut. You didn't do it. No.
Right.
And you're denying it like it didn't happen. Right. Even though you're seeing it, or your job changes, or you get moved to a different desk. Right. Or you, you know, you have to move, or you really any major change that you deal with. At first, we're like, I don't want to do this. Uncertainty. It's not happening to me.
Natural reaction.
It's natural reaction to go into denial. But to stay there becomes problematic, because you're then now continuing to run a pattern and live in a space that has changed, that really isn't that way anymore. Right? Mm-hmm. And isn't that happening to some extent in a large part? Nationally, I mean, with our entire country right now, right? We've gone through this major awakening, a breakthrough from our denial about the nature of the dot-com boom and the 5,000-point NASDAQ and all these different things. We had a significant crash, majorly blew our perception of reality. We've gone through the innumerable numbers of scandals from the Enrons and the WorldComs and the Andersons of the world. Right, where we thought these people had high integrity, but they didn't crash. And then, of course, we thought we were impervious to attack on our soil, and that was crashed too. So we've had all these things happen, yet we still seem to be now, 4 years later, going forth in suppressing a lot of the reality of the shakeups that we've experienced collectively as a society. We're shoving under the rug the increasingly undeniable fact that a lot of the world is, to put it lightly, PO'd with us.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to know that. So we shove it under the rug.
It's
very frightening.
To face that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But ultimately, when these realities become undeniable, meaning that more visceral, factual, undeniable information boils to the surface, like, yes, your job is changing. Yes, your wife did change her hair. Then we kind of move into this phase of resistance. We're like, okay, it's changing, but I'm not really happy about it. And I'm not really going to participate. And in that phase is where a couple things can happen. You can get maybe a little bit more annoyed at it and a little more frustrated and hesitant and combative. Or you can start maybe asking some questions, going, okay, well, if it's changing, then how can I maybe make it work a little bit? And when you start thinking about that, some of the questions you were asking before, it's like, okay, how can we begin to problem solve here? How can we begin to deal with this circumstance? You move into this next phase of this change curve called exploration. You go, all right, things are changing. How can we make it, you know, work for the best? How can I actually go with this? And these things are natural. They're natural human processes to go through. Because one of the absolute undeniable laws of the universe is change. All things change and move through space, move through time. And it's really powerful for us to connect into these universal laws like that, the fact that all things change and all things move through time, to help us reconnect with reality.
Wow, that's really interesting. I love the natural aspects of it, which it totally resonates. I think that's true. We as humans do move through those stages, and as I'm listening to you, it raises a what at least for me is a fascinating question, which is, given that is the situation that, and I would just state it slightly differently, or say that I think both here in the United States and elsewhere, that as human beings, we have some at least initial resistance to change. I think it frightens us, and it's challenging. Lack of security and constancy is challenging. So my question, and maybe this is rhetorical, but if, you know, maybe we can chat about it, is what can one do then to help move people more quickly to that, or do we just have to go at a certain pace to get to that point of exploration? Or is there something we can do as a collective that helps? I think I have this belief that people who are resisting a lot of these changes, it's really a very human thing. It's out of fear,
right,
and out of wanting to hold on to the past. And I think I have a lot of compassion around that, because I think it's very human and natural.
Mm-hmm.
So my question then becomes, what can we do to help gently move people, nudge them out of that, out of some locked or stuck place, so that we can move forward as a collective to the exploration? Is it about just demonstrating it and being an example as individuals, or is there something we can do to gently, you know, gently guide people into a, you know, into a more exploratory place?
Right. All right. That's a great, great, very powerful question. A lot of it does have to do, I feel, with setting an example, you know, leading the way on your own, you know, as a leader in your own front, whether it's in your own personal life or whether you're, you know, a leader on a team in a company, or whether you're the leader of a family. But a lot of it has to do really with honoring and acknowledging where people are and not making others wrong. Because as you say, it is natural, it is inherently human to resist change, right?
Yeah, and I think that we're doing that, you know, putting people down or knocking them actually increases the resistance, I think.
Exactly.
So I think it's a gentler, more compassionate approach that is the more workable.
Nobody wants to be made wrong or told that their thoughts or their feelings are wrong or that they need to change them. We need to honor where people are and harness where they are.
Yes.
Yeah. If they're in resistance, well, let's ask some questions. What's going on? What do you see happening here? It's in resistance where most of the great ideas for how to co-create the new way can come. It's when people are in resistance that they come up with some really great ideas that maybe the those that are driving the vision, right, that are driving the ship where it's going, haven't really thought of, because they necessarily didn't include everybody. How many people on the planet right now are not being included in the collective vision of where we all are going? I mean, that's a pretty heavy-duty question, but think about it. How many of us are not participating? We can bring that right back a little bit closer to home, to our own elections in our own countries, right, where we have set up we are so fortunate to live in a nation where we have decided that we are free in this country. Our government is set up to be governed by us for the sole purpose of protecting our rights, yet so few of us participate in the co-creation of determining who's going to govern us. What, less than half or even slightly half of the people are registered? A fraction of those only ever vote. So the people that are governing us, that are supposedly looking out for our rights, which we know that we've gone so far away from that natural premise of our government, but so few of us are deciding who those people are going to be. But it is about honoring people where they're at and involving them in the process. Asking questions. What do they think? How do they feel? What would they like to co-create? Because it's when people are involved in the process, involved in the process of creating what's going to be and what they're going to be a part of, that they will go along, that they will help to make it happen. And I think that simple notion, this is a something that I'm sure that we've all experienced in our lives. I'm sure we've all at some point been part of a group or a team or some process where a collective decision was going to be made and our opinion was never asked and we didn't like it.
That's an excellent point.
We didn't like it.
It's interesting. I'm now thinking back to a workshop that I happened to attend on conflict resolution, and I think a lot of these same principles come up here. Certainly, the point you just made about involving people, I think, really applies in terms of, you know, the buzzword of buy-in, getting people to buy in. But it's very true. I think it also reduces the level of fear and anxiety to involve people.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is a reframing, which is what this workshop on conflict resolution was about, as a way of really getting at the heart of the matter, the heart of the fear, or the heart of the resistance to change. And it's really quite powerful to, you know, take some statement or observation, you know, this other country is all bad or all evil, or this is, or in a work setting, this person is a horrible person, or they're not fair, or whatever, and reframing it as, you know, I want this company or this system or this world what I'm hearing is that you really want this company or this system or world to work amicably and work together and to be fair and to feel included. And so to reframe that being just an example, to reframe something like that gets away from this, you know, name-calling, labeling people or countries, and looking at only the negative of situations and kind of, you know, turning things into a positive. And I think that's another form of including people or asking, as you're saying, you know, mm-hmm. asking what, you know, meeting people where they are. So meeting people in their place of resistance or their place of fear, so that you can have more, be of greater help, really.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've all felt it. And when we can connect with one another and realize that we are all the same, we are all humans, we all have the same, you know, cognitive and emotional hardware, that, you know, it's really in those moments when we share that with one another that we really feel connected and cared for. And it's those sentiments that we are, you know, slowly learning to, you know, actually go with and to feel and to share. And you know, bringing this interconnectedness thing back a little bit closer, we were just jumping from the global level to the national election level to your own building where you live. If you live in a building with other people, do you know who lives next door? Do you know who lives upstairs? And I don't say this because I think you should know who lives there to be afraid of them. No! You should know. Why not know who is living around you? Know other people. Be aware. Say hello. We're all sharing space together. In that talk, David Suzuki talks about the nature of a single breath, how he makes one breath out to this room here today has particular particles that will, in 1 year, travel all around the globe and be ingested, I guess, or breathed in by everybody else on the planet in some way, such that air is actually alive. Because in the air, there are nitrogen and oxygen particles that we breathe in that sustain us, that come into our body. The air is alive. I love just hearing about that and just thinking about that.
An example. Wow.
So what are we doing to it? If we were all swimming together in a pool, in the same swimming pool, right, you wouldn't be dumping junk and stuff into that pool because you'd realize so viscerally, so undeniably in that moment, the interconnectedness between these things. So we ended up spending a lot of our show today talking about the nature of interconnectedness and bringing it back to our very own lives and our day-to-day interactions with others, where you live, where you work. And the more that we can understand how what we do is impacting others and how what others are doing is impacting us, the greater can be our individual comprehension of how those factors play out in a larger global scale. And hopefully, it is my vision that hopefully the more that we do this, the more the individual people begin to wake up and kind of realize who they are in the world, how they affect things, how they're affected by things. The more people that are waking up to that, tuning into that, connecting into whatever it is for them that brings them, you know, power and peace or source or God, whatever that is, the more that we can collectively harness our powers as increasing numbers of humans to impact our huge environment, our global environment, not just the, you know, environment, but I mean the economic environment, the social environment, the energetic environment of the entire planet. All large-scale change begins with individual change, individual people choosing to make a different choice and choosing to perceive things a little bit differently and to share that.
Well, I believe that. I think that's a very empowering thought because it for those of us who feel overwhelmed, who might feel overwhelmed that the only way you can make a difference is to be a senator, this really, and I believe it's true, absolutely true, is that you can make a profound difference as an individual by exemplifying these characteristics. And it can lead to some pretty powerful things.
We can make huge changes just simply by being more aware, guiding our choices, And when you do take in more information, your next choice about something will be different because it will be informed by that information. If you've always, all of your life, I'm just going to use a very radically simple, crazy example. If you've always bought Tide dishwashing detergent, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's always your default. You saw the commercials as, you know, you grew up and you always buy Tide. And then someday, somebody nutty, like myself, says to you, you know, tells you a few of the things about, you know, the nature of some of the chemicals in there, and that plants a thought in your mind that, gee, maybe some of those chemicals, maybe that has something to do with that rash that you've been having for the last 8 years on your left arm. And that, hey, there's some alternative products that are made from natural stuff that don't really mess with the skin and don't mess with the environment. Okay. You go off, and the next time that you buy that Tide, the choice that you're making cannot be exactly the same, cannot be the exact same default. It will be informed. It will be a little bit different. So that's our lesson today, ingesting new information, understanding the interconnectedness of all things, accepting our reality, and working hard to connect with others to shift it and change it. Larry, I thank you so much for calling in and chatting with me today. And we will be here again next Thursday at noon with Reality Sandwich, brought to you by Healthful Living. You can catch me at healthfullivingsf.com. My name is Martin Matthews. I am a certified medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 KPOO. Thanks for tuning in.